You're listening to the New Churches Podcast, a production of Send Network on newchurches.com. We discuss all things church planning. If you're looking to take your next strategic step towards multiplication, you're in the right place. newchurches.com has a new look, a new host, and new resources. Take a minute and check out the Church Planning Masterclass with lessons from leaders like Matt Chandler, D.A. Horton, Trulia Newbell, and more at newchurches.com.
Hi there, you're listening to the New Churches Podcast, and my name is Clint Clifton, and I'm with Todd Adkins from LifePay. Yes!
Yeah, I had to do it just for old time's sake.
Yeah, just for old time's sake. Todd is the Director of Leadership Development over at LifeWay in Nashville, and he's got a wealth of experience, and he is a frequent contributor to this podcast.
Right.
He has developed Ministry Grid, which we all use, love, know, and are familiar with, and he's developed the leadership pipeline at LifeWay that many of our churches are using. And so Todd is just a wealth of information. He's been a campus pastor. He's been a student pastor. He's been an executive pastor in churches, both large and small. And so we're really glad to have Todd Adkins here today. Before we get into the bulk of the episode, I want to tell you that Todd has another podcast called the One Ministry Question Podcast. Right. And it's a great podcast where he, Daniel M., and Dan Eyton get on and they talk about one ministry question for each episode. And might find it helpful and encouraging to listen to. So today we're going to talk about three reasons church plants fall apart. Now we realize that every church planting situation is unique. Sometimes churches fall apart for all kinds of different reasons, but we're going to talk today about some of the most common things we're hearing from church planters who are throwing in the towel, who are giving up. There's been a lot of conversations happening in the last few months about pastors in general, but church planters specifically, stopping, leaving ministry. There's even been some national articles about the subject.
Right.
But the truth is, when church plants fall apart, they often fall apart for a set of reasons that we see all too commonly. You know, I like to say, I don't like to say it, I do say regularly, that watching a church plant fail or fall apart or close is like watching a car crash in slow motion. It's, you just see every painful blow, you know, just,
right.
And you can see every inch of it. Like, especially if you're a supporter or a partner, or you're kind of close to the accident, it's awful, man. It's awful because when a church planter goes out there and he puts his neck out there, he says, God's calling me to plant a church in this place, in this city. It's a very vulnerable, you know, venture. It's a very, you expose yourself and you say, I believe God's with me to do this. And you go out there and do it. And you tell everybody, you know, on social media, and you leverage all your friends and your relationships and your family. You've asked for support. I mean, you've, like, in a way that's shameful almost, you ask for everybody, you know, to give you money.
Right.
And you've done all of this. And then at the end of it, after saying that for years and years, you've got to close it down. It's just soul crushing. I mean, it's awful. And so I want to talk about some of the reasons that that happens, some of the reasons that church plants fall apart. And the truth is, church plants do fall apart. I looked into the statistics again. There's no current statistics, but in certainly you've heard things thrown out over the years about the numbers of church plants that fail. But the best I can tell, about a third of church plants don't make it to year five. And so that there's a fair amount of church planting nationwide that doesn't make it to year five. And those who do make it to year five generally make it for a longer haul. But there's a fair amount of church planting failure. And so for one in every three church planters that goes out there and tries to do it, they don't ultimately see it to fruition. And so that's sad and painful. So we want to talk about some of the reasons that happened. So Todd, when I say that problem and talk about that problem, what comes to mind first for you in terms of what some of the major factors are from a leadership standpoint?
Okay. So I was with Midwestern Seminary this week, and we were actually talking about some of these issues, but I think it boils down to oftentimes, especially early on in ministry, we are more competent and competent in poetry than we are the plumbing of church and certainly church planting, because church planting requires a whole other set of tools and skills than just running a church that's already established. So, and everything comes at, you know, all in at once. And so whether, you know, for maybe you're a year out and you start to get your launch team together and, you know, you've got a great core group and, you know, man, you're just feeling great and things are starting to come together and you are just working yourself to the bone and you get to launch and a ton of people show up. Because now, I mean, you know, you've done some plumbing up to this point, but now's where the plumbing takes over. Now it's where you find yourself in trouble because the 90 days up to launch, you're working like a dog and you're like, okay, I just want to get to the poetry part where it happens week to week, whatever. And the reality is that the plumbing is what grinds us down. And for many guys, they don't see it because nobody ever taught it to them or pointed it out, mm-hmm. or it's just not familiar. So like that car crash, you sometimes look at it and you're like, oh man, this poor guy. In some cases, like, I don't feel like I can, like, there's nothing I can do but just watch this somewhat unfold because of the direction that's been set and, you know, what is kind of unfolding before our eyes.
Yeah.
Now, that is a little bit of an overstatement because, guys, there's a lot we can do with that. And some of it, I bet, feeds into the 3 points that you said, you know, you had kind of drawn out from this. So I want to hear what those are and let's talk about those and see, I don't know, how these things match up.
Yeah. So for the maybe not so artistic among us, maybe just right before we go into those points, unpack for us poetry and plumbing. I think I know what you mean, but so, what do you mean by poetry? What do you mean by plumbing?
So, you know, I think at one time it was like a pinned tweet or something. I was talking about leadership development as poetry and plumbing. It's uh-huh. And church leadership, it's poetry and plumbing. It is, yes, it's the vision that grabs a person's heart and compels them. But the poetry part is how you actually deliver on the dream. Mm-hmm. And if you're not able to do that, it will fall apart quickly. And you won't know why. You won't get it.
The plumbing
be like,
part
I cast a great vision. We had a great vision and I keep casting vision. Well, yeah, but eventually, man, you got to deliver on the dreams. You can have, you know, if I go back to pipeline is something that we'd be known for as well. You go back to pipeline, it's really based on McKinsey 7S framework for the most part. And that is you're moving from story, which in the church, that's the gospel. It's the old story. That's easy, you know? But story, strategy, and some people start to wince even at strategy. They're like, oh, do we really need a strategy? Okay, yes, we've got to have a strategy. So we've got our story down. We've got our strategy down. And that's it. They never do the rest. And the rest is structure and systems and skills, especially as the ministry grows and increases and the types of ministry that grow and increases. It's the skills that have to be continue to be developed both personally and with the people within the church. And then, you know, there's other pieces to that as well. I don't want to get too far off before we get started, but you know, I'm sure as we walk through some of this, it is addressed in some of these areas. So
right,
let's go.
Right. Okay. So poetry and plumbing. That's good. All right. Well, I was thinking, you know, in my experience, as I've watched church plants that haven't made it to the finish line, so to speak. And when I say the finish line, I recognize that every church planter who goes out in the name of Christ to establish a church, successful or not successful, is successful in spiritual terms. And I recognize that every church plant that quote unquote fails isn't a failure. As long as the gospel was preached and Jesus was exalted, there was a measure of success in that work. And so hear me talking about this church plants falling apart and church plants failing with a little bit, you know, loose-handedly recognizing that all gospel work has some mysterious promise in it that we don't know about how it will pan out in the future in terms of its fruitfulness. So I recognize that. However, most church planters set out to start churches and they intend those churches to last a long time. And the reality is some of them don't. And so a couple reasons for that generally. Number one, the first thing that comes to mind, and every single time, without exception, I've sat down with a church planter who's told me they're closing up shop, they're throwing in the towel, they're closing their church plant. Without exception, some version of the term isolation has been used. I feel alone. I feel like nobody cares about what I'm doing. I feel neglected. I feel like the people who sent me here don't remember me. I feel like the people who are supporting me don't remember me. I feel like the community that I'm here to serve doesn't care that I'm here or see me. I feel totally isolated. So church planters feeling alone and isolated without co-laborers in the work and without partners that are checking in on them regularly and a sense that they're a part of a team is a huge factor in church planters giving up. And really every failure of a church plant is ultimately a leadership failure because as Maxwell says, everything rises and falls on leadership. And I think in many ways, leadership is required, especially in those early days of a church plant. So isolation is the number one cause of church plant failure from my point of view.
Okay. I'm going to add another S here.
Okay.
one I've never added before to this whole thing. And that is, I'm a good Baptist boy, but I don't think we talk about Satan enough.
Yeah.
Because what, you know, anytime you've got somebody isolated like that, I would say that the isolation and that feeling is coming from two different things. One would be Satan. Because he doesn't want you to succeed for sure, and wants you to feel like crap in your calling because you belong to Jesus, and all he can help you, he can't keep you from Ephesians 2, 8, 9. You already checked that box, so he's going to keep you from Ephesians 2, 10 and Ephesians 4. He's going to keep you from doing the works that God has prepared in advance for you to do in Ephesians 4 for you to equip the saints for the work of ministry, which is your job. It's like your only job. But whatever. The thing is, often we're taking the weight of all of it on ourselves. And he's more than happy to whisper all kinds of discouraging things in our ears. And some of them are true. He's just going to grind them in.
Yeah.
The other piece would be what I talked about, the structure, the systems that will take the weight and burden off of just you. You've probably put expectations on yourself that aren't there. Did God say you had to do X, Y, or Z?
Right.
No, then don't do it. Don't do it because somebody who didn't like their church has now joined your church plant and wants you to do Awanas or wants you to do whatever other thing that you have no business doing in the first 6 months to a year of your church plant. Don't do any of those things. Say no to a lot of things. Continue to say no for the rest of your life to a lot of things. And that will help you a ton as far as whether or not you're successful. But the key thing is putting those structures and strategies around so that you can be successful. And the way to do that is to have clarity.
Yeah.
Work just as hard on your clarity as anything else. You know what? 10 years from now, you may be able to spend 30 hours on your sermon. Now is not that time.
Right.
It's not. I'm sorry. But, and I know you want to glorify God. He knows that too. I know you want to reach people. I know that you feel pressure to deliver because, you know, people are bringing their friends and all that. You're better trained to do that one thing than anything else. So if you're going to rob something right now, I'm sorry, this is probably, I'm sure some people listening to this are just really upset with me right now, but that's the thing you're going to have to rob in order to serve the church really well in where you're going and being established. I'm not saying download your sermon, guys. I'm not saying anything like that, but I'm saying, you know, you and your head, I think it's been propagated. That's why I think there's a problem with the poetry plumbing thing in a lot of our churches is you know, guys want to, all they want to do is the poetry part.
Right. Yeah, I agree. And it's been, we've heard it expressed in the phrase, preach, pray, love, and stay, out of Mark Dever's Deliberate Church book. You know, it's sort of this mantra for a segment of the evangelical community that is, that's what'll get the church rooted and growing. And though there may be some, there are certainly some preaching, praying, loving, and staying are all wonderful things, but that's not all a church needs to come up out of the dirt. That's not all a new church needs. So the first thing we mentioned there is isolation. Church planters that end up giving up on their church planting dreams often cite isolation as the first and number one reason for that.
And when I say clarity, really quickly, you're clear on your story and your strategy. Problem is you haven't done anything yet. And so when you actually start to do the stuff, you better have just as much clarity on your structure and systems.
Yeah.
Because you're asking people for their most valuable resource, whether or not they're attending or serving or leading a group. I'm asking you to give me your time.
Yeah.
And you better not waste my time. That is a cardinal sin in our culture more than anything else. Because we don't think we have any of it. But look at how much time you spend on your phone. And I would say you probably have a little more time than but you better be just as clear on your structure and systems as you are on your story and strategy. Because we're great at that part, you know, leading up to the launch. It's then getting just as much clarity in that.
Yeah, that's good. The second reason I think is probably the second most common reason that church plants fall apart is because of conflict with team members. And this seems like a strange one, perhaps, but it is extremely common. And from my point of view, I play a role of like network denominational leadership in the Mid-Atlantic, Baltimore, Washington, D.C. area, and have been working with church planters here. And it's so common for there to be conflict between team members. And often those conflicts are terminal for the church because the church is too young and weak and vulnerable to withstand its primary vision casters, leaders, shepherds at each other's throats. And so also as an anecdote here, it's just interesting to note that the International Mission Board cites conflict with team members as the number one reason church or the missionaries leave the field in their first term is conflict with team members. And so this is a major issue. And you can think, going back to your comments about spiritual warfare and Satan, you can just see the tactics of the enemy in this. Like, absolutely, the thing the enemy wants to do is to cause division among those who have set out on mission together.
Well, I do think that it you know, you can come back to some clarity issues as well. Again, if you're not clear in your communication, again, if you're not clear in making sure, we talked about vulnerability the last episode. But it is, take the time to really debrief things well and go ahead and do, you know, an autopsy of what went wrong anytime something does go wrong.
Yeah.
But making sure you're keeping short accounts will keep that from happening. And people have to continue to grow in their own spiritual maturity or they're not going to be able to handle that either. But selection is vitally important for any leadership role you have. And this is one of the key reasons, because once that person's in place, they have, the higher they are in leadership, the more bearing who they are has in your culture, on your culture.
Yeah. Yeah. Like the ingredients of a cake affect the taste of it when it comes out, the ingredients of your leadership team will dramatically affect the, so quarrelsomeness, from a pastoral leader is a primary thing you want to pay attention to when you're considering somebody to be a partner in the work with you. This is a huge factor. The third thing that I want to bring up and mention here is so we talked about isolation, we talked about conflict with team members, and the other one that comes to mind is just a general lack of self-awareness when it comes to personal giftings. I'm surprised at the number of church planters who go out and attempt to plant churches that really have very little self-awareness when it comes to their own gift mix. this, for example, the church planner assumes himself to be a good preacher when other people don't experience him that way. He assumes himself to be a good leader when other people don't experience him that way. Lack of self-awareness is a big part of this too, is if you go into the church planting work not really with a good handle on what it is you're good at and what you're not so good at, it can be detrimental to the life of the church.
So there's a couple of tools that I've used in putting together teams that I think is really valuable. And it's not that we're saying, hey, this is, if you flunk these tests, you're not going to be on our team. It is really about positioning people and the team to be most successful. And so I use a Myers-Briggs, a emotional intelligence test as well, and then StrengthFinder. And with those, I mean, you know, you can't put anybody in a box, but you can begin to, kind of hone in on who a person is, what their strengths and potential weaknesses might be by doing that. Now, the big thing that I would draw out from our conversation right now is the emotional intelligence piece. And Emotional Intelligence QuickBook 2.0 is a probably $12, $15 book. It's got a good assessment in it that's really easy to read, and it breaks it down into quadrants. So think about social awareness and self-awareness, and social management and self-management. And so you score, you know, different scores in each one of these areas, and it does based on, you know, your level of leadership and all that, compares you to other people. But the big thing is, I have found in my experience that there are people that greatly lack self-awareness, and you know, we all know some of those people. But a tool like this, again, can be a great catalyst for conversation. So if you have a team member like this, or just for yourself, it's just giving permission to have a conversation, a great conversation. So it's, again, another way to sow in that vulnerability,
right?
A way to sow in having the courage to confront yourself by exposing yourself to others and asking for their feedback. In this form, you're asking for a book, you're asking for a full assessment, but then I would say process that with others. So
yeah.
Forgive me for camping out here for a second, but you know, you can take that assessment and a personality assessment, print that off and give it to a spouse and, you know, one or two of members of your launch team or somebody that you trust is kind of a good-willed person. And have them highlight things that, yes, this is definitely you, and highlight things in a different colored marker that are like, no, this is definitely not you.
Right.
Because wow. What you'll do then, you're going to do that too. And you're going to see some things that you thought you were really strong in, and somebody else is like, not so much.
Yeah.
But hey, the beautiful thing is there's going to be things that they highlight in green that you didn't know were strengths. And that's going right. to make you feel really good. But in both instances, you're going to understand yourself better and position yourself a lot better for success.
Man, that's so helpful. I think, one of the things that this makes me think of when it comes to church planting is there are basically two categories when it comes to this in terms of church planters I know. There's the church planter that goes out and starts the church, and he's the boss and everybody does what he says. And there's really no interaction that would allow him to get feedback. There's nothing in the rhythm of the church or in the life of the church that allow him to get feedback about his own competency or how others experience him. But then there's the church plant that has sort of a bit of a more team mentality, and they build into the infrastructure of the week some feedback loops where, you know, we're asking ourselves the question, how did things go technologically this week? How was the sermon? In terms of, was it biblical? Was it faithful? Was it, how long was it? There are things that are being asked, questions that are being asked normally, and it becomes commonplace to hear sort of positives and negatives. Man, this was exceptionally good compared to what's normal. This was exceptionally bad compared to what's normal. And I think all of that creates a culture where it's okay to give and receive both positive and negative feedback all the time. And it's not really, if you only hold that for the times when you really have to say something because you can't not anymore, it feels so heavy and offensive. And so I would just encourage you, if you're starting a new church, to build into the infrastructure of the church some regular feedback loops. I think it'd be incredibly helpful for you. Well, guys, thanks for listening to the New Churches podcast this week. I'm Clint Clifton, and I've been with Todd Adkins, and we hope that you will check out the Church Planting Masterclass that is now available on our website, and we'll look forward to hearing feedback from you. If you have any comments or questions, you can reach out to us on our website. Thank you.
You've been listening to the New Churches podcast, brought to you by Send Network. If you liked what you heard, take a minute to rate and review us, or share this episode with a friend. It's the best way to show your support. To find more reliable resources and to participate in the Church Planting Masterclass, visit newchurches.com.